Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we talk about on this podcast, what it means to do that. I share ideas and strategies. I share stories about things that worked, but also some of my big epic fails that I've made along the way. And today we're going to talk about something I've been talking about, since December on and off. It's the reality of AI and what this means for a creative classroom, what it means for content creation. We'll have a whole podcast episode devoted to that at some point. What it means for teacher work, which is something we'll explore later. But also I've talked about how it's going to change the way students do work, what it means for project-based learning, and all kinds of different ideas connected to that. And today, that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about this idea of the AI revolution and the sort of humbling reality that we really can't predict how it will change learning. And that's because we really can't predict how it will change our world. And before we get started, I just want to say, if you don't follow me on social media, would you consider doing that? My Twitter handle is @SpencerIdeas, but my Facebook and my Instagram handles are both @SpencerEducation. And we're having some fun conversations, and I would love for you to join in on the conversations we're having. So please consider following me there. What do you think all of this means for the future? A friend asks. We've been talking about ChatGPT for nearly an hour, but suddenly it starts to hit closer to home. I don't know, I answer. I mean, our kids are about to go to college. They're going to choose a major, and then what? Does the job they choose even exist in a decade? He asks. It won't. I mean, it might exist in name, but it's going to look totally different. There are moments when that feels scary, and other times it feels exciting, and then there are times when I think maybe AI won't change things much at all, and maybe I'm just over-exaggerating, I answer. He looks at me. You know, I try to remind myself that this isn't even about AI. Takes a sip from his pint and then continues. Our parents had the same worries. This is just what it means to have a senior in high school who's going to go out on his own. When we went to college, it wasn't AI. It was something else, I'm sure. But it was something. You know that they were worried. I've written before about how the latter is now a maze. But there's something unnerving about this shift now that my son is about to enter that maze. The hardest part is that we don't know how AI will change learning. We don't even know how it's going to change our thinking, and we can't predict how it will change social and political and economic systems. We simply do not know. We can't predict how AI will change the world. Right now, AI feels scary, and that's simply because it's new. Science fiction is now science reality, and collectively, we have a picture of artificial intelligence forged largely by movies like Blade Runner and Battlestar Galactica, which I realize is not a movie, it's a TV show, and the Terminator franchise, and perhaps a more nuanced view with Data in Star Trek. There's an uncanny humanness to the creative answers you receive on ChatGPT, and it kind of weirds me out a little bit. My knee-jerk reaction is often, how do I stop this? Every time we experience a new technology, though, we also experience this moral panic. We hear dire warnings about the technology and how it will destroy our world. I mean, consider the bicycle. If we think about it historically, there was a huge moral panic around the bike. When the bicycle was invented, newspapers predicted everything from neurological diseases to distortions of the face, so-called the bicycle face, to psychological damages, to the destruction of the moral fabric of the family, and on and on and on. Columnists warned of young women being addicted to bike riding. And then when telephones were invented, citizens were concerned that the phones would explode. People fought against telephone poles for fear that they would cause physical harm. But over time, the technology becomes boring. That's right, boring. You can think about it as a graph, and you have time as the independent variable and concern as the dependent variable. And over time, you have this beginning place of unawareness of the technology. But then as people become more aware of it, they start getting more concerned. And then that leads to this peak place of moral panic. But then with increased usage, there is less concern. And during this, you have acceptance. And more it gets accepted over time, it eventually flatlines down at the bottom, which is a state of boredom. So if we think about this, we've all experienced this on some level, right? For me, I'll give an example. I experienced this on a personal level with data tracking. I hated the notion that tech companies would know my location. And I had a general sense of awareness, but then I had this like moral panic. And at some point, I kind of got over it. I started to use Life360 because our family used it, our extended family used it. And eventually, I grew to accept that some level of data tracking was just going to be a part of life. And then what became this invasive app in my mind, I just accepted as something that we would be using. And then eventually, Life360 just became a very boring tool. Or consider social media. I resisted Facebook at the beginning for fear of identity theft. But now it's a part of life. Facebook is boring. I mean, it's a location where old friends and extended family all just hang out and talk in a slightly awkward location. It is boring. Right now, we're in our peak freakout mode around AI. And schools have been wrestling with how to respond to it. In a previous podcast episode, I talked about how you can take a lock it or block it approach. You can take the sort of full embrace of it and view it as this solution for the future. But one of the realities is at some point, AI, like all other technology, will just become boring. And I would argue that it's in this boring phase that we actually need to be the most concerned. If the freakout mode is an overreaction, the boredom phase is an underreaction. It's an uncritical acceptance of technology as the tools become more and more normalized and eventually invisible. But when this happens, when we think uncritically, when we just embrace it as a part of life, it's in this moment that we fail to grasp the ways that our tools are reshaping us. And we do this simply because it got boring. We forget that cars are powerful because we drive them all the time. They've become boring death machines. And we forget that social media is changing our democracy. And that's because we just shared a picture of our kids with our grandparents, right? It's a boring thing that's really easy to forget just how powerful it is. And the reality is we can't predict how AI will change our world. I've seen bold predictions about how artificial intelligence will change learning in the next few years. I've read think pieces about AI replacing teachers, ruining English classes, and making us slaves to our robot overlords. But the hard truth is we really can't predict how technology is going to change. AI will impact our social and political and economic systems in ways that we cannot in this moment predict. We will think and act differently. We will live differently. However, none of us can predict these changes to any degree of accuracy. Not social scientists, not technologists, not futurists, not educators, none of us. We will all be surprised in a decade or two. When the aforementioned bicycle was invented, few people could have predicted it would impact women's suffrage and that it would help lead to a, or at least amplify, an early feminist movement. Few could have seen the ways that it would connect people and spark social movements within cities, but also between cities, that it would network different communities. Instead, people were really, really concerned about that so-called bicycle head. No one could have predicted the way that the Industrial Revolution would emphasize the nuclear family, change our self-perceptions, lead to the belief in personal privacy, one I am currently actively, voluntarily giving away to Life 360 at the moment, and spark climate change. There was no way to know this ahead of time. Gutenberg could not have predicted how the printing press would lead to the rise of the nation state and Enlightenment thinking. And I guarantee you that glass lens manufacturers had no idea that their work would eventually lead to better telescopes, which then led to the scientific revolution and the rise of secularism around the world. More recently, people were largely concerned about stranger danger on social media. And while that threat turned out to be overblown, few people could have predicted how it would impact our attention spans. We hardly notice the way our perception of time changes when we scroll by relevance, or the way that numbers and gamification shapes our social behaviors. This is the first era in human history to attach numbers to relationships and to treat social interaction like it's a casino. We had no idea how strong the fear of missing out would be on youth mental health, but it is significant right now. Or the way it would lead to the rise of factionalism and filter bubbles and change democracy. We also had no idea how powerful it would be for storytelling, for making small connections with formerly lost friends, for getting an opportunity to publish and share to an audience without any gatekeepers. It is a mixed bag. Social media, like all technology, has its pros and cons. It's easy to look back and say, how did we miss that? But it is really hard to predict the future. We thought Facebook would be a great place to tell folks what we were eating. We didn't realize it would become a method for sending and sharing misinformation. The bottom line is that AI will impact us in significant ways, but we simply don't know what that will look like. So what is the solution? Where do we go from here? I would argue we need to think critically, but humbly. Instead of asking students, how will AI change society? Maybe we ask, how is AI already changing our lives? Engage in hard conversations about smartphones and attention spans, not from a curmudgeonly reactionary way, so much as a descriptive and curious way. We are poor predictors of the future and oblivious of the present. But the more we think critically in the present, the better we are at anticipating the future. So again, if we want to think about how technology will change our world in the future, we really have to begin by thinking about how it is changing our world right now in ways that we don't see. I have a set of questions here. And these are designed to help you ask students how to think critically about AI. This might feel early to be asking these kinds of questions, and I realize some of these questions are a little bit early. But we need to start getting in the habit of asking these questions if we have any chance of making sense out of the ways AI will change our world. So here we go. Where am I using AI without even realizing it? How does AI actually work? How might people try to use artificial intelligence to inflict harm? How might they try to use it to benefit humanity? And what happens when they use it to try to benefit others, but it accidentally causes harm? What does AI do well? What does it do poorly? What are some things I would like AI to do, and what is the cost in using it? What are some of the things I don't want AI to do, and what is the cost to avoiding using AI? How can I combine artificial intelligence with my own creative thoughts, ideas, and approaches? What is the danger in treating robots like humans? What are the potential ethical implications of AI? And how do we ensure that it is aligned with human values? What guardrails do we need to set up for smart machines? What are some of the ways that AI is already replacing human decision-making? What are the risks and benefits of this? What are the types of biases that you see in AI when you use it? And what do you need to look out for? Who is currently benefiting and who is currently being harmed by the widespread pervasive use of AI and machine learning? And how do we address those systems of power? When do you consider your own work, and when do you consider it to be AI generated? When does it seem to be doing the thinking for you? And when is it simply a tool amplifying your own thinking? What are some ways AI seems to work invisibly in your own world? What is it powering on a regular basis? This is simply a set of questions to start a dialogue. Initially, for me, it was a set of 10 questions, but then I typed this question into ChatGPT. What are some of the critical questions I could ask about artificial intelligence? And I liked two of those questions, so I then added it to my list. And then I rewrote what it created to make it more my own. I almost went to ChatGPT first, but I've already noticed that when I use AI first, I end up missing out on my own key thoughts. In other words, even if I can use artificial intelligence for ideation and brainstorming, I'm already realizing that I don't want to. I'm trying to be intentional about when and how I use this tool, because for me, on some level, it's already hitting the boredom stage. And if I'm feeling lazy, I'm liable to outsource the thinking to the machine and not think for myself. So again, back to this question, where do we go from here? I'm not sure that there is an easy answer to this. I think some of it comes from making sense out of the ways that we're already thinking differently because of our machines. So picture this. A couple days ago, I'm wandering a narrow residential street in Washington, D.C. I meander through the neighborhood of narrow row houses with bold tones of purple and orange and turquoise. I'm surprised by the splashes of color in a city I typically associate with beige or gray marble. I pass through a maze of streets and catch a glimpse of the obelisk in the distance. I close my eyes and orient myself to this Washington Monument. And then I imagine the White House and the Supreme Court building, and I try to picture where I could possibly be. I slip my hand into my pocket, and I hold it for comfort. I'm itching to search my step count. I'm curious about my social media. I'm thinking maybe I want to pop in a podcast. But more than anything else, I want to know the fastest route to get to the National Mall. In moments like this, I'm struck by my dependence on my smartphone, by my concerns about metrics, my need for notifications, and my desire to capture this very Instagrammable neighborhood and share it as an Instagram story. I'm struck by my struggles to navigate a city without a map app. Spatial reasoning has always been hard for me, but it's gotten worse in the last decade, and it's largely because I am so dependent on things like Apple Maps and Google Maps. But this is precisely why I'm exploring the city with my phone in my pocket. True, a podcast could keep me entertained, and yes, the map app could show me a faster route. But there's something almost magical about exploring a city by foot. There's an almost game-like quality of finding landmarks and memorizing street names to orient where you are in the moment. I know it sounds odd, but there's almost a meditative aspect of going on a walk in a new place with no direction, no map, no distraction, just pure exploration, breathing in the cold air and absorbing the colors and the sounds and the sights of the city. These walks help me realize that thinking is a habit. I don't engage in spatial thinking or deep work or more memorization. Those things will atrophy. Over the last few years, I've been intentional about doing those things that technology can do faster. I go on walks without using the map app. I engage in mental math instead of pulling out the calculator app when I am trying to determine the tip at a restaurant. I sketch note my thoughts by hand and write in a journal. I memorize old sacred verses and poems, even though I could look them up in seconds. And I do all of these things because they are enjoyable. But I also do these things because I want to be aware of the ways that a tool like a smartphone is changing the way I think and act. Every time I do something with my inaccurate, clunky, messy human mind, I become more aware of how technology and its precision is shaping my world in both positive and negative ways. In these moments, the technology becomes visible again, and I can move out of the boredom stage and into a place of both criticism and appreciation. When technology is invisible, I don't appreciate it. I take it for granted, but I also don't critique it. And I miss some of the negative aspects as well. But it's more than that. Technology can always do things faster and more efficiently. But we can do things differently. That meandering stroll through a neighborhood might be slower, but it's also more beautiful. Similarly, you can buy a machine-made blanket at Walmart with no mistakes, but I will cherish that blanket a friend crocheted for my daughter before she came home from the hospital, even if it does contain a few imperfections. Those imperfections make us human, and it's our shared humanity that makes life worth living. And it's this imperfect humanity that makes every single work of art unique. We create amazing things not despite our imperfections, but because of our imperfections. In the future, students will need to become really good at what AI can't do and really different at what it can do. So if we want them to think critically about AI, we need them to continue to use it, but also to learn how to avoid it and find different ways to do the very thing AI does well. This might mean using AI for writing, but choosing to write something entirely from scratch. It might mean ideating with AI, but also skipping out on this ChatGPT and instead brainstorming with sticky notes. It might mean using Google Maps at different times, but going for a stroll through Washington, D.C., and letting the city surprise you. AI will always be vanilla, but your unique voice, that is what will always make you human. This is probably not the best metaphor, but I've shared before that AI is our vanilla, and our students will need to offer a unique flavor. That uniqueness is the imperfection that we all share. So in the end, we don't know how AI will change learning. We can't predict how it will change our world. But one of the best things we can do is help students find their voice and retain that sense of humanity. We can ask them to ask hard questions and think critically about technology, not in the future, but right now, asking how it's changing their world. And we can encourage them to embrace all of their imperfections and recognize our shared humanity. Because in the end, if we want to understand AI, we're first going to need to understand ourselves. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts, and maybe tell a friend about it as well. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.